So the guest we have, luckily she got my frantic emails, and here she is in the waiting in the studio. I think she got the emails, or she just happened to pop in. She did not get my emails. Okay. Well, surprise, surprise. You're up. How you doing? I don't know if you're ready, but thank you for, and you just happened to check the studio out. No, we had technical difficulties. So I had to stop in the middle of the show. This is going to be totally your show now.
Okay.
So, Deb, thanks so much for joining us. Really, it's I spoke with you the other day. Mm-hmm. It's so funny because the last show, I'll just tell the audience a little bit. The last show, I reached out to everyone and said, "Hey, look, I want to make these 3-minute videos for breaks, and would you please email me if you had an experience?" So you emailed me your experience that we're going to talk about, and right off the bat, I thought, "Well, I don't know if I can do this in 3 minutes." But I started recording, and I realized, we're gonna do this. And as we recorded 30 minutes, my guest this week unfortunately had a pet issue and canceled. And you said you'd be willing to come on live. So this is what I want to thank you very much.
Well, thank you for having me.
And let's just clarify this: you have talked about this situation to your family, and that's basically it, right?
That's about it. Yep. My husband knows, my 2 children know. Actually just messaged my 2 sisters yesterday and asked them if they remembered the incident, and they did not at all. It was news to them, so they didn't even know.
Wow. Yeah. But you did talk to your father.
I did. Yeah.
So let's talk about a real quick hello to you, who you are, and where you grew up, and just go ahead and tell us what happened.
Okay. So I grew up in South Africa in a town called Benoni, which just to sort of put it on a map, it's east of Johannesburg. And I think most people are familiar with just the name at any rate, of Johannesburg, which is one of the biggest cities in South Africa. Mm-hmm. So I grew up in this relatively big town, but we lived sort of out in the sticks. And my 2 sisters are, and I'm sort of building this background because I think it's relevant to the experience as a whole. Mm-hmm. My 2 sisters are much older than I am, so it was almost like being an only child. They were already in high school when I was just not even in elementary school. Anyway, so I was kind of a quirky kid. I didn't make friends very easily. The first few years in elementary school, well, school was pretty tough, but the first few years in elementary school were difficult because I couldn't really connect with anybody my own age. So what I would do is I would tend to go and find the kids who were a year or 2 younger than me. And I just felt a little more comfortable with them. And, you know, that was my idea of friendship in the first few years. And so thinking about that, Martin, sort of gave me a little more clarity as to when this experience probably happened. Because as I had said to you previously, I actually I can't put an actual date to it. I can give a time frame. And I had thought that it was somewhere between 1975 and 1977. So I would have been somewhere between 8 and 10 years old. The more I think about it and sort of my, sort of that whole elementary school experience, I'm thinking it must have been about 1975 that it happened. So I would have been 8. And the school that the elementary school I went to, the way that the school and the playgrounds were structured was you had these buildings sort of spread across the length of the school grounds. And then depending on which grade you were in, you had, you would have the younger kids, like the first graders and the second graders would have their own little playground. And then you would move on to the next few grades and they would have access to the really big field. And then the kids who were like 11 and 12 years old had their own separate little playground somewhere else. So I was at an age where I should have been on the big playground with my age group. I tended to hang back on the smaller one that was divided from that big playground with a corridor. And so, okay, now I'm going to get into the actual experience. So what I remember of that day, and I want to be careful because, and we spoke about this, I'm fully aware that memories change, that every time you think about something, you're getting a slightly different version of the original.
Right. Because you actually, it's a reconstruction. I've been looking into this a bit.
Yeah.
And each and every time you recall something, you're reconstructing it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you fill in the things that are unknown with something you're familiar with. That's yep. That's where things can get a little tricky because, right. And that happens a lot of times when someone has a very dramatic experience with things they don't understand, they kind of fill in those little tiny holes yep. with something they're familiar with. But anyway, I'm right. sorry. I kind of went on a little too much about that. So,
No, but that's right. And I think it's important to remember. It's important to keep that in mind. And so I'm looking over at the illustration that I did of what I saw. And I figured that, you know what, I ended up just, it's very basic, but in a lot of ways that's good because it's not showing things that that may or may not have been part of the craft. So, okay. And I'll get into that in a little bit. So anyway, back to the experience on that particular day. Was it cloudy? Don't know. Was it sunny? Honestly, can't remember those details, and it's neither here nor there. I do distinctly remember standing on the corridor that divided the little kids' playground from the main field where kids my age were. I was standing on the corridor facing out towards the main playground, the field. I remember the teacher who was on recess duty that day. I remember her clearly. And it was so strange. And so at the age of eight, just so that listeners know, we didn't get TV in South Africa until 1976. And when we did get TV, we had it on for an hour, maybe 2 hours a day, and the rest of the time it was test patterns. Things like UFOs or aliens or anything else were just, it wasn't part of my vocabulary. It wasn't part of my world. My world was living out in the boonies, running around with my dogs, getting skinned knees and making mud pies, and that was it. So I didn't have that prior experience or knowledge, I guess. I remember looking up, and it was kind of like it wasn't there, and then it was. And it was just there, sort of out of the blue, right over the field. It seemed low. It was higher than tree level. And I was actually looking at a Google Earth image of that field today, and there's a rugby pitch on it now. So that sort of gave me an idea of, okay, because I was trying to think, like, how big was it? You know, if people want to know how big was it, what do I relate it to? Well, thankfully, there's that rugby pitch. So that gave me some idea. Yeah, and there's the field. The X is where I would have been standing, looking out to the field.
So and is the little circle there, is that where it was?
Yeah, except, you know, obviously much, much higher up, because that just, I mean, that's a very distorted two-dimensional image. But yeah, that's about where it would have been. And I want to say that it could easily have been 100 feet in diameter, easily. And I kept having to go over that and over that in my head this afternoon. That's huge. That's enormous. But then again, I do remember words like big were popping into my head and my memory. It was a typical saucer shape.
Do you mind if I put up the drawing?
No, not at all.
Okay. So you did this drawing just recently.
Yeah.
And this is basically what you saw.
Yeah. And it's very abstract. But you know what? That's okay. Because the things that I can honestly say that I know I remember about it, and I kind of know why that is from talking to my dad and things he corroborated, the color red will not leave my mind. That craft was red. Now, you know, when you're a kid, what does red mean? Red means a hot stove. And so maybe I equated it to this thing being hot somehow. But I was saying to you that the best way that I could describe it was it almost seemed to have a glow from the inside.
Almost like just like to say something like a poker in a fire, you know how they turn.
Right. It wasn't like it had, you know, a red paint job. Yeah. It was almost like emanating from it. It's very hard to put into words. So saucer shaped, red, huge. It stopped. It just stopped right over the playground. And there was never a feeling of fear. I never had a feeling of fear. I just remember being in awe. I was awestruck. And then at that point, I remember looking out across the playground and seeing the teacher on duty and just noticing the children who were directly around her. And they were all just staring up at it, basically with their mouths open. And it's as if we were in a bubble with no sound, like all the sound had been sucked out of the world. The craft itself was absolutely silent. It just showed up without, you know, there wasn't any sound that made us go, oh, look what's coming.
So just right there. I mean, this actually, I got to tell you, this is giving me goosebumps, but, when you say the sound was like sucked out of the world, did you not hear like the voices of the teacher or the other children? Nothing at all? Nothing.
It was, and in documentaries I've watched and people, you know, watching videos of people's experiences, sometimes they'll talk about high strangeness. I don't know if that qualifies as high strangeness, but.
Close enough.
Yeah, it was very, very weird. It's just like it was not a long sighting. I mean, it probably lasted for seconds, but it was so profound. So there it was. It stopped, just stopped. we all, you know, stared in wonder, and then it took off. It sort of exited toward the west, which, I mean, I'm thinking about that in my head, and it doesn't have any, I don't think it has any real bearing. That was in the direction of OR Tambo, which is the international airport for Johannesburg. I don't really know that that has any connection. But it just, it shut off. And within literally the blink of an eye, it was just a pinpoint on the horizon.
But you could still see it?
Just a tiny dot, like literally in the time it takes to blink. And because that area when I was in school, it wasn't nearly as built up as it is now. And because it's a very flat area, they aren't mountains. It's a plateau. Everything's just very flat. You could see pretty far out to the horizon. And it was just this pinpoint on the horizon and then gone. And then everything sort of returned to normal.
This is just an opinion up here.
Yeah.
Being that close, she was probably saturated with frequencies above and below human hearing. These are all good points. And a lot of these listeners that are in here have been, looking at this topic a long time and have, it's all just theories. We don't really know. But thank you for that comment.
Absolutely. It's really interesting to think about. I mean, it's interesting to think about all the things that it could be and the reasons that those things could be. When it left incredibly fast, and again, I was only 8, but it was fast. It was, I remember just staring like, how, your mind just can't make sense of it. And there was absolutely no sound. And that's, you have these certain commonalities. I think most experiences share things like the craft didn't make any sound, or sort of the high strangeness aspects, or I don't know. Those are the things that I can connect to with other people's experiences.
Now, just a couple of things, a couple of questions. So when this was over you, I know it was a long time ago and you're just a little girl, but do you recall any other things that you remember in your senses? Like, was there any feeling of pressure? Was there any other emotions? You said you weren't scared, which I think is pretty interesting. Did you feel calm? Did you feel like whatever it wasn't there to bother you? And of course, this is all, you've never heard of what a UFO is. You didn't know, you didn't know what you're looking at. So, right. So these are, I have continuing questions along this line.
Yeah.
But for right now, do you remember any other senses?
Not really. And again, I don't want to try and search for things that aren't there.
Right.
So
yes.
No pressure. I didn't feel any sort of pressure. It's very weird. And I think other people have talked about this too, but you almost did have the sense that something was looking at us. I could stop to take a peek for whatever reason,
Going. I know that you've looked into this, the schoolyard sightings.
Yeah.
And there's, Preston Dennett did a book on them. I think he said there was 120, I believe, maybe I have that number terribly wrong, but of schoolyard encounters. And, you can speculate on why, children are impressionable. They're open-minded. Mm. Why are these things showing up in schoolyards? I don't know. But so there was no, none of the feelings of scared or exhilarating, would you say?
Not even exhilarating. And when I looked over after it left and all the sounds seemed to almost flood back in, I was still just standing on the corridor looking out, and the teacher and the kids around her were all talking. And I guess they were probably all saying to each other, "What was that?" or something. And I was not the kind of child who felt comfortable never mind around my peers. But there's no way I would have gone up to a teacher and said, "Teacher, what was that?" So I just hung back and observed. And then, you know, you're 8. And when you're 8, you're on to the next thing. I remember telling my father, well, I don't remember actually telling him, but clearly I told him, you know, maybe that evening or within a few days of the incident, because I do remember him asking me multiple times to describe what I'd seen and to draw what I'd seen for him. Mm-hmm. And he absolutely believed me. I think him asking me to describe it over and over and draw it for him is part of what helped to really solidify that information in my head, even though it's been so many years. I feel like I can count on that information, that part of it, to be true. Like, for example, if I look at this craft and I go, okay, red stands out for me, the shape absolutely. You know, did it also have like a little bump on the bottom? I don't know. Did it have a row of windows up here? I can't say whether I, maybe, maybe not. I don't remember those details, but the other details, they're there. They're solid. The other reason I know that is because just a couple of months ago, and it's funny, I went through my whole life not asking my family about it, not talking to my family, because after that initial retelling to my father, it just sort of went away. And my family weren't the kind of family who'd be like, "Hey, we've got to get hold of the newspaper. We got to contact the school and find out more about this." That wasn't my family. Hmm. And so it just sort of went quiet. But a couple of months ago, I thought, you know, I'm going to ask my dad. And I had texted him to ask him if he'd heard about the whole Pentagon report that was coming out. Mm-hmm. And he said, no, he hadn't. And I was telling him about it. And then about a month or so later, I called him on the phone and I said, "Hey, Dad, I want to ask you about that." Because he said to me in the text, he said, "Didn't you have a UFO sighting when you were in school?" And I was like, "Yes, okay." I wasn't imagining it. It really did happen. And I said, "Yes, I did. And I'll never forget it." And then about a month or so later, we got on the phone with each other. And I said, "I just want to ask you, what do you remember me telling you?" And I thought, I'm not going to put anything in his head because I want to know exactly what he remembers.
Great.
And outside of the color, he didn't mention the color red, but he basically described exactly what I have told you. And again, it was validating because, you know, every other day you're thinking to yourself, did I imagine this whole thing? I think Francis, who was one of the witnesses of Ariel, had said that. And I mean,
yes,
if you can feel that way after experiencing something like the Ariel encounter, then if you're just an 8-year-old on the, you know, on the playground and nobody else is corroborating it, you're definitely going to feel like that a lot. Like, did I make it up? But as soon as you start to say those words to yourself, the next thing out of your head is, no, I know what I saw, which I think is probably the reason that James Fox has that as a title for one of his documentaries, because those words are really, they're profound. I know what I saw. You cannot change my mind. You cannot convince me otherwise. I saw something extraordinary is what that says to me.
I just text James yesterday or the day before. He's in Brazil, and I told him about your encounter and that we're talking about his film. I know what I saw. He was threatened by gunfire during some filming down there, so right. But he's safe. He's safe and he's going to be coming home. But anyway, yeah, that of all the films that James Fox made. I know the last one, The Phenomenon, was really good, but that, I Know What I Saw, I really like that, that movie.
Yeah.
I've watched that several times over the years. And that's available for free for anyone, if it's a new listener out there, on YouTube. You can find it on YouTube, or it used to be anyway. I'm not sure if it still is. But yeah. So what has happened over the years? Here you are, an 8-year-old girl. Now you're growing up. A lot of things people will ask is, did it change? You know, someone's going to ask you this sooner or later, so I might as well.
Yeah.
Do you think it affected any of your abilities in any type of way? That's something encounters seem to, people that had encounters seem to say that quite often.
No, I don't think so. I can't point to anything that I can say, oh yeah, that comes from somewhere else. No, I mean, I wish I could. That'd be kind of cool. But I can't say that. No.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just after it happens and after you've, you know, I told my dad about it, you pack it away. It never leaves you, and you think about it. You think about it from time to time, because how can you not? It's just a part of you now. But
when you come to grips with this over the years, when you hear people say things like, oh, you know, the tinfoil hatters, you know, the people that talk about UFOs are just not cases, and why do only crazy people see UFOs? How did you feel about all that? You know, like the ridicule side, did that make you keep it quiet even more, like you actually have been? I mean, is that part of the reason you've never really talked about it?
Definitely. Yeah, you just get on with your life, you know, you get on with growing up and, you know, all the, just growing up. I mean, that's a lot right there. And then, you know, I came over here, I met my husband, and I told him about it. And I wouldn't say that he's not, it's not that he doesn't believe that UFOs exist. It's just, as he said to me once, he said, he absolutely believes my experience. And he said, you know, the thing is, Deb, I still have a job to go to every day and a mortgage to pay. It's not part of my reality. I can't devote much time to it because I've got so many other things that are right in front of me on a day-to-day basis to think about. And I get it. That makes absolute sense. Unless you've had an experience like this, I think it can be really hard to put the time and energy into thinking about it. And
I said a quick hi to him, and from things you said, he's very, very supportive, which is great to have that.
It absolutely is. And my kids have always known about it. I remember reading books with my son when he was little. I must have read them with my daughter too, but my son really got interested, like in the Betty and Barney Hill story. And I mean, he's always been very interested. And my kids are very supportive and absolutely believe me and don't feel like, you know, I can't let anybody know that my mom's an experiencer because that's too weird. They've never been like that. Yeah. But you definitely feel like that in relation to the rest of your life, you know. It's not something I could share with my friends. And I've got some really good friends that I can have heart-to-hearts with. But that isn't something I feel comfortable sharing because it has always been, it's always had the stigma attached to it, like, you know, people are going to laugh at you. People are going to go, what are you talking about? You know? So you don't share it with your friends.
I've got something to say about this, because you just kind of brought something up that kind of touched me in a way. And that is, and I've never talked about this, but I was doing this show for like 4 or 5 years. I had never told my son that I had a UFO sighting.
Wow.
In 2007. So we were out to dinner one night and I told him, hey son, guess what? I do a show on, are you ready? On UFOs. And he's like, what? Because he, you know, we had the conversations over the years. You know, he didn't think that was happening. And so he wanted to hear about, well, what did you see? And when I got done telling my story, he says, you know, I never really believed UFOs, but he says, you know what? I believe you because you wouldn't lie to me.
Yeah.
And I just told him what I saw and what happened. And from that point on, he's had an open mind, but it is really, it's nice to have the support of your family.
It really is. It means a whole lot when you know that you have that, because on the other side of it, you know that you can't, it's not something you can just go out and you don't feel comfortable telling everybody or having people know about you. I mean, I've worked in schools and that was what I did. I worked in different schools. And so you're not going to talk about it there. I've always thought of myself as a very, very science-minded person. I love astrophysics. In fact, my son and I love getting into conversations about astrophysics because that's his thing as well. And I appreciate the scientific method. I appreciate that. However, I think that I'm grateful for this experience, if for nothing, for no other reason than it's given me perhaps a broader mind than I maybe otherwise would have had.
Yep.
It's helped me to really think outside the box and go, you know, we don't know. We just don't know a tenth of what's going on. We just don't know what's out there.
That's right. Yeah. I recently was on a panel with Richard Dole and Lee Spiegel, Mark D'Antonio and all that. We were sitting around a table and I think it was Richard said, like, you know, we don't know what this stuff is, but isn't it great? And it's like, yeah, you know, it makes, you know, without it, and if you don't have that in your life, the thought that there may be something else, you know, it's a much smaller world. I mean, it just seems to open it up if you really look into this, you know,
and
we're such as people that look into this or people like you, myself, that have had, you know, an experience. And then there's other people that haven't that are really interested in it, but it's a very small segment of society. But I do believe by the growth of this show over the last few years, and I do believe that it's growing all the time.
Yeah, and I can see that. And I think really that's what changed for me. You know, within the past few years, YouTube has become my TV of choice. And I think my topics of choice have always been the science, predominantly the science channels. I do have other interests, but the science channels. And then I was starting to find James Fox's documentaries and thought, oh, you know what? I want to watch these. I want to know what other people have experienced. I want to see if I can sort of connect with their experiences. And from there, it just sort of snowballed for me. And I kept having more and more suggestions on YouTube because that's what it does, which is how I find your channel. And, but I became more and more excited. And my son would say to me, Mom, have you never spoken to any of your classmates? And I'm like, well, first of all, there are maybe a handful that I'm still in touch with, not even a handful, who may or may not have seen something, who were at the same elementary school. And I don't know what other people's experiences are, but I've only recently, just recently reached out to one of them. Because every time I thought about reaching out to them, I had two fears. The fear that they would say, I have no idea what you're talking about. Sounds like you made the whole thing up. And then you're kind of going, maybe I did. Did I? I don't know. And then the other reaction is them saying, Yeah, I remember. Well, then what do you do with that? That starts a whole new conversation. So I just thought to myself, it was that whole thing of, I'm not even going to go there. It's not worth it. There's no point. I'm not even going there. But then I saw the documentary where you interviewed Salma Sidik.
Oh, yeah.
And that was when I was like, you know what? Enough. Maybe it's time to stop sort of keeping this to myself, because so many people feel that way, you know? And people talk about it all the time. Oh, you have X amount of cases that are reported, but who knows how many cases are never reported? How many cases are there that we don't know anything about because people have concerns about coming forward?
And hundreds of thousands, I would guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I would think we know just a fraction of, you know, cases.
I mean, it's almost like whenever I feel safe enough to bring up the topic, when there's a few people around, there's one of those people that said, oh, yeah, well, this happened to me. You know, you know, and people I've known all my life, you know, this author I've known, when she found out that I did a show on UFO, she goes, oh, you can't believe what happened to me when I was hiking. You know, this thing came right over us. And, you know, I mean, there's so many, and you're right. You know, these people keep it to themselves.
Yeah. And I get it. I totally get that. I mean, I only just mentioned to my sisters, and both of them said, wow, we had no idea. Mom and dad never told us anything. And they were teenagers. They were, you know, one sister was heading out into the working world. The other sister was finishing up high school. And my parents must not have thought it was anything they needed to know, which, fine, whatever. But my oldest sister said, I need to know all about it. Tell me about it. You know, what did you see? What was it like? Yeah. And it's still current. I don't know. I would like to think that going forward, I'm going to have the courage to reach out to the classmates that I'm still in touch with and say, I've got kind of a weird question for you. And be okay with whatever answer they give me, because again, yeah. I know what I saw.
Yeah. That's to me, I think that's a really good attitude, you know, let go of the outcome and,
right.
And, I don't mean to sound kind of cruel, but what are you waiting for? I mean, it's a good time.
It's been a while.
it can't hurt. I mean,
right.
If this was 3 years ago, before it seems much more acceptable to talk about it, you know, of course, everyone was having caution. I just feel like it's more and more comfortable. Now, these people, I don't know where they, you know, you were in South Africa. I don't know where they landed, where they are now. But in the world, maybe wherever they are, it's not so much acceptable as it is here in the States right now. I don't know.
Yeah, the one friend that I reached out to, I've not heard back. And it's been a little bit. Which is interesting to me, because I doubt that she hasn't seen my message. And yeah, I don't know. That's interesting that she has not yet said anything to me one way or the other. And she doesn't have to say anything at all, but that's just interesting to me.
Okay. Besides watching YouTube, like you say, and catching up on, you know, what other people are saying about this topic. And I'm glad that you're doing that. I did the same thing. What else has happened in your life in regards to this, the effects that this has had on your life as time's gone by?
Well, honestly, like at this moment in time, just sitting here and talking to you about this for me, this is really big, because I'm a very just naturally very anxious person. I'm very introverted. I have a very small group of friends. And honestly, the part of the pandemic that suited me just fine was being in my house and not having to interact with people, because I kind of like that. That's just who I am. I don't feel comfortable putting myself out there. So this is kind of huge.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it has to do with, as you said, you do feel that the scientific community is definitely, there are people in the scientific community who are taking more of a stand and saying, you know what, how are we not looking at this? This is happening to, and unfortunately, I mean, I get it, but it's unfortunate that it had to get to the point where the military and professional pilots and whatnot were reporting it for it to be even considered. It's unfortunate that regular people experiencing it aren't, that their experiences aren't validated in the same way. But having said that, I get it. I mean, I do.
But you're right. That's a really good point. And, you know, we're talking not just the average person, but we're also talking, you know, police officers, people with credibility that had these sightings. There's been plenty of those. There's so many police sightings.
Right.
Yeah. Here's a question. Have you had any other odd experiences before or since?
Well, Richard, just one, and it was more odd in my mind than anything else. So the town that I currently live in, within the past couple of decades, at least, and I know that's sort of a long time, but again, sometime in the past 20 years. And I'm saying that because that's when we moved to this house. And I remember it happened when we were in this house. But there was a report in our local paper about a family who'd been traveling home. It was dark. As they passed one of the schools in town, they saw something on one of the fields, the playing fields. And so the dad pulled the car into the parking lot and shone his lights on it. And there was this landed craft. And it was just a brief newspaper article. And my husband was reading it to me. And this wasn't something actually that I told him until many years later. But as he was reading about these other people's experience, I suddenly had this like flash of fear. And all I could think was, oh no, they found me. They know where I am. And it was, I actually like went cold with fear. And then almost as suddenly as that feeling came over me, my next thought was like, this, you know, don't be ridiculous. That absolutely isn't the case, but that feeling of fear still lingered a bit. And I am not saying in any way, shape or form that whatever that family experienced was here for me. Absolutely not. But I think it's just another example of how much of an impact that sighting of mine had on me, that's sort of where my mind went to.
Sure. And that is, I know that this might be hard to understand, but that's a common thing, not a common, but something I've heard before. And, you know, there was someone that was on this show not that long ago that kind of talked about that when he saw a UFO over him, he had an experience before and he knew it was there. I mean, it's not like he thought it was there. He knew it was there. And it's not a self-centered thing. It's just, it's a feeling. It's a feeling. And you can't deny, you can't control those.
Absolutely right. And years later, when I happened to mention it to my husband in some conversation, again, he didn't go, Well, that's silly. You know, why did you think that? He went, yeah, I get it. Yeah.
Really? Wow. That's good. Yeah, you have a good man there.
Yeah, I'm very, very grateful to have such a supportive family. Yeah. Who don't see it as a bunch of just, you know, silly mumbo jumbo. Yeah.
So yeah. One of the things, let's see, we open the lines and we actually have someone on the line right now. So I'm gonna bring Bill in, and we have Jeff from Indiana on the line. Welcome to the show, Jeff. You're on the line. You're on the air.
And,
hi.
I can't see your name here. I got it muted. I think the ridicule is waning now that the Pentagon has announced that, you know, these things actually exist. So I don't worry about that anymore. I never did worry about it. I'm an experiencer. My wife and I, we had four of these crafts at a daylight thing. And I could have hit him with a rock. And I told everybody. I didn't care. Because it really doesn't matter what people think. We saw it. And that's all there is to it. And I told everybody. And good responses, bad responses, didn't matter. One of the things about the sound. They make no sound. But I think what the thing is when it's happening, it is so riveting. And so... such a visual experience. You are so drawn to it and so mesmerized by it. At least I was, and my wife were. I was like a video camera in my mind. And you kind of block everything else out. There were some cars that went by and stuff. I remember the sound. It didn't, I don't believe they block out the sound. But yeah, you know what you saw. I know what I saw. And Martin knows what he saw. And when you know, it's really disheartening when people you try to honestly tell the story to, you know, roll their eyes. That's a really hard thing to do, but it really doesn't matter what they think anyway.
Yeah.
The only last thing I'd like to say is I think one of the most bad assumptions is that the government, after Blue Book and that, said they're not interested in UFOs anymore. Well, I have a friend of mine who works for the Defense Department, and trust me, they have never dropped the ball on this subject. They have spent more on cosmic top secret than they have on a nuclear program, because these things have been violating our most sensitive airspace, shutting down missile banks. And if you think the Pentagon wasn't driven crazy about this, you're misinformed, because they are very concerned about these things. And probably what they're more worried about than the fact of aliens themselves, what they were worried about with the people was, if they acknowledged them, then the people were going to go say, what are they? Well, we don't really know. The other thing they were going to ask was, can you protect us against them? And the government was going to say, no, we cannot. And that is more terrifying than the aliens themselves.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. I agree.
I'm really enjoying the show. And that's all I got to say.
All right.
Sorry, Martin.
No, go ahead.
I hope that more people have your courage to just speak about what they see and not hold back.
Yes. Thanks for the call.
I know that. I hope it's real. It's so real. They say there's no evidence. My God. There's endless evidence of videos, and you know, they always say a policeman or somebody is more reputable. You know, there's doctors, lawyers, a factory worker is just as reputable. An intelligent person can tell the public or their friends or whoever what they saw, and everybody should just. And we've been seeing this for 70 years. And I can't believe what the government has done. It made us out to be idiots, you know. So,
yeah.
these cases in Africa are very interesting. These schoolyard, I guess yours is, there's two of them that I know of now that have been reflected on here lately. They re-interviewed the other school. I don't know, how many kids were there? 100 and some or 60-some kids
were that 60...
they interviewed after they're grown kids now? Or grown people now, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Very interesting. I wonder what... And the message was, you're destroying the earth. Stop destroying the earth. Now, how could they think that telling some children in South Africa how they would... have a bearing on how we're treating this earth, you know. But I've been talking too much. You need to get to somebody else.
All right, Jeff. Hey, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah. Before I take the next caller on, we have a John holding in Oregon. Have you done like a map, looked on the map to see how far away you are from where the Ariel School incident in Zimbabwe? How far away is that? Is it like 1,000 miles or?
You know, I don't know exactly, but it's quite a few hours drive.
Okay.
But Zimbabwe is just to the north of us. I'm not sure exactly how far though. That was fascinating though. I actually asked my sister if she'd heard about that. I was already living here when that happened, and I did not hear about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to her, I said, apparently South African Broadcasting were one of the first there after the BBC, I think. I think that's what they said.
Yeah, BBC was there fairly quickly, and then John Mack came in, weeks later. And, if you watch those interviews, they're chilling.
Yeah. Yeah. But my sister said she doesn't remember it being reported, but that's the thing again, you know, it would probably have just been a blip on the news channel. And if you missed it, well, that was that.
Well, the thing about that is there was a lot of people that saw that. It wasn't just the kids.
Right.
There was people in the town. There was a pilot.
Right.
You know, there was a lot of people, I can't remember exactly how many. And then it was going on daily for a while.
Yeah.
Not the encounters at the school, but around that whole general area. And it's always curious to me why they're in a certain area and show up again in a certain area. That's always, you know, it's baffling.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was thinking after listening to Selma, I was like, maybe it hovered over our school and went, dang it. There's a grown up there. Keep moving. We need to find a school where there are just kids.
Yeah.
But
funny. Yeah. Well, there was actually there was one teacher in the yard.
I thought she was in the tech shop.
I'm not really sure, but she did see it. And she came forward after she was quiet for many, many years.
Wow.
So we have John on the line. He's calling from Oregon. John, you are live on the air. Welcome to the show.
Okay, thank you.
Hi.
Martin, I have a question for your guest. Hello.
Hi.
Actually, two questions, if I might, just quick questions. My first question is, have you yourself had any experience of missing time with this episode or anyone that you know? May I stay on the line for this, Martin, for the second question?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
All right. Thanks, sir.
I thought about that. I've been thinking about that more recently. And of course, I haven't confirmed with anybody else that they even saw it. That'll be a whole nother journey. But for myself, I want to say I don't think so. And the reason I say that is because our recess was a certain period of time. I think it was like maybe 20 minutes or half an hour or something.
Mm-hmm.
And we weren't late back to class or anything. I don't remember that being an issue. And I feel like being the kind of anxious kid I was, I would have known if we were late back to class. So I want to say no.
All right, then. You know where I'm going with that, though, right?
No.
I'm sure Martin does. there have been people who've had close encounters like this, just sightings, and they've experienced strange episodes of missing time and then found out later on that they had been abducted and taken on board the craft unbeknownst to them. Their memories wiped for a while and they were returned where they were.
Yeah.
Strange as it sounds.
No, not strange at all. I mean, considering, you know, all the cases that you hear, and I mean, Betty and Barney Hill, they didn't know for quite a while, but.
Case in point.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, as of this, right at this point in time, I would say no. But to your point, who really knows, right? I don't know if I did regression or if I found out more from other people who were there that day and may have seen something. Yeah, I'm not sure.
Do you think that you might be up for trying a regression? Would you feel comfortable? Because I actually know someone that I know would not lead you in any way. That's very good. Just in case. I mean, we can talk about it, you know, off air. But anyway, is that something you'd actually consider?
Maybe. I mean, it would have to be the right circumstances. Because I definitely, again, this is where my science mind kicks in and I say, okay, that can work if it's done correctly and if it's done in a way that doesn't plant ideas in the experiencer's mind.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's right.
Maybe. Yes. I don't know. Yeah. Again, I think I casually mentioned that to my husband once, sort of, you know, very casually, like, you know, maybe I should do regression. And he said, Deb, whatever you need, go for it.
Wow.
And just having that, having people say, yeah, do it if that's what you need, is just very freeing.
Exactly.
So maybe.
Do you have a follow-up with that, John?
Yeah. Yes, Martin, I do. Thank you very much. Just quickly, one of the previous caller, I believe, mentioned something about the sound around you suddenly being muffled. That's a common thing too. He had a different theory than I do. What mine is that possibly there's some sort of a field around you, round about you, that this craft is projecting that blocks out sounds beyond. That's just a theory of mine. All right, I just wanted to ask. It's not really a question. Thank you for coming on the show. I appreciate you for taking my call.
All right.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, John. And the lines are open, so that number is up on the screen, 855-472-5483. You're welcome to call in if you have a question for our guests. I think you're amazing, by the way. it's been really, this has been really fascinating. So, all right, let's just talk about your travel through life.
Mm.
Did this pop up here and there? Or you saw something on TV? I mean, were there triggers in different ways?
You know, yeah, there must have been. I mean, it stayed so alive in my mind, and it only got stronger over time.
Ah.
You know, sometimes I think, I'm like, wow, if I was only about 8, when I experienced that, what do you know when you're 8? But you know about as much as what you're looking at as anybody of any age, because it's such an unreal thing. And the other thing is the type of business that my dad was in. He was in advertising. And so we had opportunities to go to, you know, the airport and actually go on stationary planes. I remember that specifically, and going into a cockpit and sitting with the pilots, which when you're a little kid, it's so exciting, you know, all those buttons and dials and everything. And we were in the flight path of the planes coming and going. So I knew what airplanes looked like, and I knew what craft that you see all the time looks like. And this was not that. This was not that. It stays with you. It definitely does. And then as you start to see and read about and hear about other people's experiences, it really validates everything you've been through, even if you feel like you were sort of in a your own little bubble when it happened and there was nobody right there that you could share it with, which is why when I hear the Ariel experiences talk about what happened to them, I think about how wonderful it was really that they had each other.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's kind of too bad that you don't. And hopefully you'll eventually be able to reach out to someone. And, you know, I mean, your father validating it, that must have been really big for you.
Yeah, it was a relief. It really was a relief that he came forward and said, didn't this happen to you? And yeah, you told me this and this and this. And I went, okay. And then to have my sister say, I never knew about that. And I wasn't sure how she was going to respond. I wasn't sure if she was going to say, that's just a bunch of hooey.
Yeah.
Although I would have hoped not. And then when she said, please tell me about it, that felt good too.
Right.
So, yeah, it's important to hear people, no matter, you know, what they do in life, whether they're a fighter pilot in the Navy or just a child or anybody else. It's important to listen to people's stories and, I don't know, just let them tell their stories.
Right, right. So let's go back to you being a child and you have this experience. You never heard of the word UFO, flying saucer, any of that stuff. You had no idea. What did your brain try to tell you that you saw? Was it just a mystery only?
Yeah, I just remember being, I think the part that stuck out for me was just how it was there, this huge thing just stopped on a dime and then just, it was gone. That was just so extraordinary. Like, that's not supposed to happen. And I've gone over it over and over again. And I'll talk my husband's ear off about this and say, come on, because he knows a lot about aircraft as well and military aircraft. And I'll say, come on, what's the fastest one? And when was that flying? Okay, there is no way that anything could do this in the 70s. And things, there, we don't have anything that can still travel that fast, that you blink and it's gone. Like,
well, you think of just alone, if there was passengers, if there was a crew,
right,
in that, they would be smashed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they would, the G-force, it sounds to me like this is an instant type of situation.
Yeah.
And you know, just a thought, because I don't know, but it's just maybe a theory. Maybe I shouldn't theorize, but probably the same thing that made the sound, as you say, suck away, like completely away, is probably the same thing that can make them travel like that. It's probably all part of it.
I think it possibly could be. Yeah. And I'm starting, there were a few YouTubers who are exploring those ideas with theoretical physicists, and they talk about the Alcubierre drive and, you know, how if we created a time machine, you could actually achieve what appears to be faster than light travel. It doesn't break those laws of physics and it isn't faster than light. But it's all about like manipulating the space that's directly around you.
Yeah.
And that is so fascinating. Like my science mind goes, oh yeah, that makes sense. Tell me more about that. See? And it seems outrageous until it isn't. You know?
Yeah.
It seems outrageous when you don't really understand what makes something work. but then you figure it out and then it's not outrageous anymore. Then it's something that everybody can do. So I just think a lot, I think we just don't know how any of this works. And so it's easy to dismiss it.
I agree. And, you know, I've had conversations with people like Seth Shostak from the SETI, who runs the SETI program, Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. And people like that can be closed-minded and just say there's no way that they can travel from, you know, even the nearest star, which is four and a half light years away, to here. It's just impossible. But they're not thinking outside of normal physics that we know about.
Right.
You know what I mean? There's something that we don't know about yet. And yeah. And like I've mentioned this a number of times on the shows, like all throughout time, the contemporary thinking is we know everything.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing more to discover.
Yeah.
You know?
And then it changes.
But I think, like you said earlier, I think we know very little.
Mm.
You know, we know just a little tiny fraction of what is going on and these things fit in there somewhere.
They have to, because it's not a figment of hundreds of thousands of people's imaginations. That's for sure. And yeah. It's not just a seagull or a, you know, something wrong with the technology the pilots are using or whatever. So,
When I guess I'm going to ask you, when is the first time that you realized that you saw, oh, I must have saw a UFO? I mean, how did that occur to you all of a sudden? I mean, did you see something like on TV or
it was actually my dad.
Ah,
yeah. Uh-huh. Because like I said, I don't actually remember telling him I saw something weird, and I wouldn't have used the word UFO because I wouldn't have known what that was.
Right. Yeah.
But I would have probably said something like, I saw this strange thing at school today. And then he would have said, oh, you know, what was it? And I would have explained it. And then he got interested. And so he's the one who put that out there after the fact and said something to me along the lines of, you know, blah, 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 UFO. And then obviously explained it to me. So
this is just a note up there. Thousands and millions meet our people. They're not lying somehow. You know, I mean, this is, you know, just validation. Yeah, that's true.
Right. It's so true. You know, if you see all the similarities across all these stories and there are these things that connect people's experiences.
Right.
Yeah, it's time to start believing. Thank you, Avi Loeb, and everybody in Two of the Stars Academy, even though I know they've all gone their own ways, but they're still working really hard to keep this current.
That's right. I can't believe that we've actually run out of time here.
Yeah, it's time.
Again, the show's being dedicated to Kevin Childress, who unfortunately passed away at a young age. Deb, I have to tell you, I am totally honored that you felt comfortable to be on this show and you told your story right from the heart. And it really means a lot to me.
And thank you. Thank you for having me on. And thank you for giving me an opportunity after all this time to feel comfortable sharing my story.
Well, you're very welcome. And I hope this is, in a way, kind of therapeutic for you. So,
yeah, totally is.
All right. Well, you take care.
Thank you so much. You too.
All right.
Bye. Good night.
Good night. All right, everyone. So that is it for the show. And wow, that was amazing, I think. So, and someone says, thank you, Deb. You're a champ. So we'll be back next week with Trey Hudson. And I can't remember the topic, but I'm sure it will be a great show. Thank you, everyone behind the scenes, and for all your help, everyone, and support. And remember to keep your eyes to the sky.
Thank you.